The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt on Tuesday, October 5th, from live inside the Beltway. Have a good morning to you. I have a lot of news for the rundown, but first I have to tell you what I thought last night going to bed. I was listening to the College Football Inquirer, which is a podcast recommended by Doug Lemarie. So I thought I'd listen to it. Doug and his colleagues, Nathan and Stephen, do Buckeye Talk, which is the best single program podcast in America covering the Ohio State Buckeyes, and Doug recommended College Football Inquirer, so I was listening to it, and somewhere along the way in the course of that, it occurred to me when they were going down the AP Top 25 that college football is actually a red state deal. And I'm going to ask you about why. 1-800-520-1234. Alabama number one, red state. Georgia number two, red state. Iowa number three, red state. Penn State, number four, the red part of a purple state. Cincinnati, number five, a red state. Oklahoma, number six, a red state. Ohio State, number seven, a red state. Oregon, number eight, a blue state and falling. Michigan, number nine, that's the blue part of a purple state. Number 10, BYU is red. Number 11, Michigan State is the red part of a purple state. 12, Oklahoma State is red. Arkansas at 13 is red. Notre Dame at 14 is in a red state. Coastal Carolina is in a red state. Kentucky is in a red state at 16. Mississippi at 17 is in a red state. Auburn, 18 in a red state. 19, Wake Forest in a red state. Florida, red state. Number 20, 21, Texas, red state. 22, Arizona, purple. 23, North Carolina State, red. 24, SMU, red. 25, the only pure blue state, San Diego State at number 25. So college football is now a red state phenomenon. Why is that? I should ask Guy Benson this, but why is college football, why are the programs that dominate college football in red states? I have my theories, but that's my big question for you. 1-800-520-1234. Now, the rundown. Gone in minutes, out for hours, outage shakes Facebook. This trembled Twitter yesterday as Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram, Messenger, Instagram, Facebook, and Oculus dived into the ground and disappeared. Facebook resumed services after a six-hour outage, according to the Times of Israel. The New York Times is the one that had said it shakes Facebook. And, of course, the Washington Post says, Zuckerberg's apologies have been a staple of Facebook scandals. Now the company offers defiance. I'm here to tell you, I don't care. Yes, we use Facebook for this show to keep you up to date on stuff. Fetching Mrs. Hewitt loves Facebook. I don't care about Facebook. I use Twitter to advance politics and sports discussion. But if it all went away, my life would be the same. I still read books. I don't want podcasts to go away. I like podcasts. But generally speaking, did you actually care? 1-800-520-1234. I know some of you depend upon it for business, and you probably cared. Like my 2004 bestseller, If It's Not Close, They Can't Cheat, came out on the day of the Democratic or the Republican convention in New York, and they had a publishing house fail, and Amazon went down. It was in the early years of Amazon, and then the wireless at Madison Square Garden failed, and it was a total day to promote, and I didn't promote. That was kind of angst-inducing, but other than that, you know, the internet is around us. It gets up, it goes down, people get used to it. Big, long story in the Washington Post. Supreme Court takes the bench after long absence, but things have changed. In a first for oral argument, the court justice Brett Kavanaugh participated by telephone from home after testing positive for coronavirus last week. The courtroom was largely empty, about two dozen reporters scattered around the seating gallery, along with the justice's clerks. All spectators, including the arguing attorneys, wore N95 masks. And most significantly, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died a little more than a year ago, has been replaced by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who was seated beside her colleagues on the mahogany bench for the first time since she joined the court in October 2020. This is a new year at the Supreme Court. It's a new reason to give to the Alliance Defending Freedom. which will be up there on every critical case having to do with freedom of religious expression, free exercise, and your First Amendment rights generally, your right to free expression, and the rights of the unborn, and separation of powers. If you care about speech and religion, Alliance Defending Freedom is for you. It is the new ACLU. The ACLU has just become a lefty organization. Alliance Defending Freedom is still out there defending every speaker, every religious organization. Please head over to HughHewitt.com. Wait for the banner at the top of the post to post up there, and then make your contribution. I ask you every day. I'm going to ask you every day in October, because October is the time we talk about Alliance Defending Freedom. But don't wait. You can listen to, example, Lydia. Lydia was mandated to wear a school mask, and she complied, but she wore the message, Jesus loves me. I'll let Lydia tell you what happened to her next.
Well, this mask I had said, Jesus loves me, and in the beginning of school, nobody said anything about it. Well, later on, the computer teacher said I couldn't wear that type of mask.
Now, of course, Black Lives Matter masks and other political masks were allowed, but ADF swung into action and got it arranged for Lydia to have the same free expression rights on her mask as any other student, which is what the First Amendment compels. That's the Alliance Defending Freedom. They represent all their clients for free, which is why they depend upon $10, $100, $500,000, whatever you can afford to Alliance Defending Freedom. Please call 866-359-9644 and be generous, or just go to HughHewitt.com. Number of states with residents at 35% obese or more as a percentage of the adult residents rises from 9 to 16. COVID didn't help. OPEC opts against a big output increase, pushing oil prices to a seven-year high. Let me do a market check brought to you by Birch Gold. Now, Birch Gold is where I buy my gold. You can find them at by texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. They've been a sponsor of the show for a long time. Or go to HughGold.com. Yesterday, the Dow was down 323. The NASDAQ got slaughtered, 311 points off, down 2%. S&P fell 1.3%. No way to tell what's going to happen today. Overseas, everything is up, though. Everything is up. But crude oil up to $77.78. For Brent crude, $81.54. Gold went up to $17.56. The 10-year Treasury increased as well. Inflation is here. Oil is showing it. Commodities are showing it. Stocks will rebound. That's because of the Financial Times. China property sector worsened deep. China property sector woes deepen as mid-sized developer defaults. Empty buildings in Chinese provincial cities, according to the Wall Street Journal, testify to the Evergrande debacle. And it is a debacle. It doesn't look like it'll spread to the United States. Stock futures tread water after sell-off early this morning, a headline. But treading water while Europe goes up isn't really a big deal breaker. Other headlines of the day. The South Pole posts the most severe cold season on record. A surprise in a warming world. Yep. But they managed to tell you that never mind, global warming is still with us. Don't worry about the extreme cold. Dr. Francis Collins, frequently a guest on this show over the last year, announces he is stepping down by year end. Dr. Collins is a fine public servant. He's also, I believe, recognized that before people start calling for him to retire, as I did Tony Fauci last week, he's going to leave on top. Good for him. President Trump, according to the Washington Post, has been talked out of announcing a 2024 bid for now, settles on a wink and a nod strategy. Let's wait and see. Then the Washington, no, this is the a story from the Lily. She was a stripper during college. Now she's running for Congress and sharing her story. Alexandra Hunt, 28, kicked off her run for Pennsylvania's 3rd District. When the strippers running for Congress get more attention than the veterans who've lost limbs, then I think something's wrong with the United States. Michelle Goldberg, a hard left columnist for the New York Times with whom I've appeared occasionally. What's wrong with Christian cinema? Nothing at all. But when you defy the left, of course, as one of her quotes says, describes you not as a maverick, but as a, quote, narcissist. I think she's invested in that self-image. Personally, as someone who stands up to her party, and I think she's really lost track of what is actually politically prudent, even to put aside the impact on the lives of a million of people, said Emily Kirkland, executive director of Progress Arizona, a progressive group that worked to elect Sinema to the Senate. There's a difference, it turns out, between being a maverick and a narcissist. That's Michelle Goldberg, a narcissist. BBC may not exist in a decade, says a British conservative member, because of its extreme left-wing bias. Across Kabul, evidence of Afghans fast unraveling Taliban under the eyes of the Taliban is everywhere. And Iran has said they'll talk to us for $10 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I don't think so. That's the rundown on a Tuesday morning. Call me at 1-800-520-1234. Why does college football prosper in red states and decline to ruin in blue states, with the exception of Oregon, which is quickly fading? Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. That music means that David Drucker is in the house. David Drucker's book, In the Shadow of Trump, debuts, I believe, on October 19th. It is very timely today because there is a Washington Post story out that Trump is running a wink and a nod campaign, David Drucker. Trump, talked out of announcing a 2024 bid for now, settles on a wink and a nod unofficial candidacy. What do you make of the headline?
Well, it's some good reporting, but, you know, Trump has been running a wink and a nod candidacy since the day he left the White House. And it was pretty clear to me when I interviewed him for the book in May that he was running that he was interested in running again. You know, he asked me, he's like, why do people think I'm not running? I said, who says you're not running? Let's just talk about other people that may run if you don't, which I finally got him to agree to do.
How long did that take?
You know, about 3.5 hours.
Yeah. But I mean, I
got him there.
So I was told yesterday by a confidant of the former president that he is going to run, and that if he changes his mind because of health, but that he looks in great shape, that he's lost 15 pounds, feeling great, playing a lot of golf, loves talking politics, that if he does run, he's going to destroy anyone who runs against him. I mean, just take them out at the knees and turn on them. And if he doesn't run, he'll be supportive of them, hoping to freeze them for a while. Consistent with your understanding?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, we know that any time he's in a campaign, he tries to take people out at the knees. Again, nothing new. I think the thing to understand about President Trump, former President Trump, is that he loves being in the arena. He loves holding his big rallies. He hasn't tired of politics. He didn't want to retire from politics. And unlike presidents in the past who have lost, he's simply not going to do so. He wants everybody to think he is going to run because it allows him to maintain his leverage. I think in his own mind, he wants to run and plans to run. And I think, and I know that he tells everybody he is planning to run. He's not going to announce early because it would change fundraising requirements. He wouldn't be able to raise money for his super PAC directly. There are a lot of things he wouldn't have to be able to do and a lot of things legally he would be required to do that he has no interest in doing and realizes, having been through this, that he doesn't have to do. And I don't think we're going to know exactly what he's going to do until he gets there. And I don't even think he really knows, although I think we know how he thinks. I think one of the reasons the talk has picked up is because after President Joe Biden's numbers sunk because of the Afghanistan pullout and the way that was handled and what we all saw on our television screens, he senses weakness in Biden that made him more emboldened, and the idea of running to avenge his loss became more possible to him. But I think we're going to have to see sort of where he is and where the party is to sort of understand when these things happen, just how potent he'll be in a primary. We know how he polls. We know that he's a strong candidate. What we don't know yet is who's willing to run. If he won't, when I interviewed Mike Pompeo for my In Trump's Shadow podcast, which is a companion to the book, I asked him, if President Trump runs, will you blatantly or, you know, will you preclude yourself from running? And he wouldn't say that he wouldn't run, which I just thought was interesting. Whereas somebody like Nikki Haley has said, I will not run if Trump runs. So there are so many factors we're going to have to look at when it gets time for the campaign that is already underway to really get underway.
And Chris Christie has also told me it's going to make no impact whatsoever on him. And so someone will challenge him. And Larry Hogan's going to run regardless, the governor of Maryland, I think.
I think Larry Hogan will run. Obviously, he's in that one lane of we're going to do it differently, and we're not going to run as a Trump candidate. Everybody that runs, with the exception basically of Larry Hogan, is in some fashion or another going to tell Republican voters that they are going to be the next Trump in terms of policy, in terms of attitude. Some of them will have trouble on the attitude front finding an authentic way to communicate that to voters. Others won't. But that's what sort of Trump has wrought inside the party, is he is now sort of the North Star. Even for candidates that don't appear Trump-like, they will try and convince voters that you will get a different version of Trump, but a good version of Trump if you elect me.
And well, I am waiting for my reader's copy of In Trump's Shadow so I can get ready for our conversation soon after Pub Day. And so I hope it arrives soon, David Drucker. In Trump's Shadow, in bookstores everywhere on October 19th. You can pre-order at Amazon.com right now. I hope the book tour is shaping up nicely, David.
Things are coming together. It's my first rodeo, so it's a little new to me, but it's coming together, and I'm excited about it. And look, I hope people buy the book.
Don't do book signings in cities where no one has interviewed you. This is my one advice to everyone. I've sat in a bookstore alone for 3 hours, and so bad the staff got in line and kept coming around and felt bad for me. So only go where there's been publicity. That's my only rule. David Drucker of the Washington Examiner. Follow him on Twitter at David M. Drucker. Go get his book, In Trump's Shadow. Come right back for hour two of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
On Hayek, show up to his boat, T.L. Adams. Senator Sinema last night was chased into a restroom. Do you think that those tactics are crossing a line?
I don't think they're appropriate tactics, but it happens to everybody. From the the only people it doesn't happen to are people who have Secret Service standing around them. So it's part of the process, yes.
It's part of the process, America. Morning glory. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm joined by Byron York, who wrote yesterday about Kristen Sinema, the Democrat from Arizona, who does not agree with the largesse that Democrats want to spread around the country. And in response, the New Republic called her a traitor. The Nation said how she is sold out, the original story of Kristen's of the Senate's newest supervillain. And then Matt Iglesias, Kristen Sinema must be stopped. In the era of Trump, that would have been seen as a threat. Byron, well done yesterday. I don't think the left is going to ease up, though, on their new Michelle in Cottle in the New York Times today calls her many names.
That's right. I wrote it before the New York Times published the stories that said simply, what's wrong with Kristen Sinema?
Yep.
So as a matter of fact, after the bathroom incident, which occurred in Arizona, she's flying back, Kristen Sinema is flying back to Washington, and she's harassed on the plane about DACA. So, I think remember there was a period of time when resistance forces were harassing Ted Cruz, they harassed Sarah Huckabee Sanders, they actually, a restaurant kicked her out in Virginia. And there were people like Maxine Waters saying that anyone who supports Trump should not find peace anywhere. You shouldn't be able to fill up your car at the gas station. You shouldn't be able to buy a gallon of milk at the grocery store without having to face the consequences of your political positions. Well, clearly that seems to be now directed at Senator Sinema.
Now, I do not quite get what the DACA activists are doing for one simple reason. The parliament, maybe they don't know that the parliamentarian has ruled that DACA cannot be part of the reconciliation process, regardless of what Kristen Sinema does. There's no way. Chuck Schumer's admitted that. So they must be arguing with her about the filibuster. But the supervillain on the filibuster is Joe Manchin, who, again, let's play what he had to say, cut number 11 yesterday in the Senate hall. Joe Manchin, I think it's Manu, is up in his face, cut number 11.
Schumer has ruled out using reconciliation to move ahead.
Out anything. We just can't let the debt ceiling elapse. We just can't.
So does that mean that you're open to potentially even killing the filibuster?
The filibuster has nothing to do with the debt ceiling. Basically, we have other tools that we can use. And if we have to use them, we should use them.
Now, what I love about that, Byron, is that the media keeps the filibuster issue alive, despite the fact it's dead, dead, dead. But also that he's simply parroting Chuck Schumer's fact-check false assertion that they can't use reconciliation. The parliamentarian said they could.
They can. There's simply no doubt about it. But, you can only use reconciliation basically once a year. And it would have to be the problem is that Democrats are planning to use reconciliation for their big social and climate spending bill. So if they have to attach a debt ceiling measure to that, then it would really have to be done by October the 18th. No way that's going to happen. So I think Democrats are saying there's no way we're going to reconciliation is the only tool we have to pass this bill that we don't have majority support for in the Senate. And there's no way we're going to use it to raise the debt ceiling and thus putting it off the table for our big spending bill. That's why it's a no starter.
Now, I understood it slightly differently. I thought they could do reconciliation twice within 2 months, although it counts as two strikes. Nevertheless, they don't want to do it because they have to name a specific number in a reconciliation-enabled debt limit raise. And they don't want to put a specific number on it because they know Republicans will run against a specific number. I also believe history has shown that Republicans had to pass it on their own when they controlled all three chambers. I actually don't know what all the fuss is about, except that the media simply will not challenge Democratic talking points. Let me go to Dr. Fauci with you, Byron, because yesterday he took the scene. Well, let's go back to Sunday. Here's Dr. Fauci with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation, cut number 12.
But we can gather for Christmas, or it's just too soon to tell?
Margaret, it's just too soon to tell.
Too soon to tell. Yesterday on CNN, Dr. Fauci, cut number 9.
I also said something over the weekend that was taken completely out of context. I was asked, what could we predict for this winter, for like December and Christmas?
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I say you hold off on that. I said, we don't know, because we've seen slopes that went down and then came back up. The best way to assure that we'll be in good shape as we get into the winter would be to get more and more people vaccinated. That was misinterpreted as my saying we can't spend Christmas with our families, which was absolutely not the case. I will be spending Christmas with my family. I encourage people, particularly the vaccinated people who are protected, to have a good, normal Christmas with your family. But just the way all of the other disinformation goes around, you say something talking about a landmark of a time and it gets misinterpreted that I'm saying you can't spend family Christmas time, which is nonsense.
Now, I'm not sure it was disinformation. Let's play it again, Byron, so then you can comment on it. Cut number 12.
But we can gather for Christmas, or it's just too soon to tell?
Margaret, it's just too soon to tell.
Okay, so, Byron, was it misinformation, disinformation, malign spreading of anti-Fauci propaganda?
Well, I think he clearly said it's too soon to tell whether we can gather for Christmas. Wouldn't you say that's a fair restatement of what he said?
Yep.
I don't know why he does this kind of stuff. I don't want to misquote Scott Gottlieb, but I think basically he said something like, get your vaccination and live your life. And that seems to be the best advice right now that we've gotten from authoritative figures. So, you know, Dr. Fauci is, what's the good word, the way to say it? He's a creature of the media. And I think he kind of thrives on setting off these mini controversies and then, in this case, trying to clarify himself afterwards. But he just, you know, he'll do an interview with anybody, and he says all sorts of stuff.
Well, he did an interview with me last week in which he said he'll never resign.
See, he'll do an interview with anybody.
There you go, anybody. But he's been here many, many times, and I always try and give him tough questions. But I went through the many CDC, FDA failures, and they are failures. His noble lie about the mask, the J&J pause, the failure to do ivermectin research in a timely fashion, the failure to do research on masks on children under the age of 5 in a timely fashion. Now the booster mixing of equity concerns with efficacy concerns. There is a long list of public health failures. Back to the original flawed testing they developed, back to the original failure to sign the alarm. Have you lost confidence in him, Byron?
Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. Just as an observer, as a non-scientific observer, when I want to know something, like okay, what is the extent of breakthrough infections? What percentage of deaths are people who are double vaccinated or fully vaccinated? What percentage of hospitalizations? A lot of this information is rather difficult to find, or you'll find competing versions of it. In part because Fauci has not been a reliable source of the best information. And I think a lot of the debate that goes on, the uninformed debate that goes on, and I try not to be part of that, but I can be very uninformed. The uninformed debate that goes on is as a result of the government not being a credible source of the best information.
That's absolutely right. I also want to point out that the reality of bad faith critics does not destroy the reality of good faith critics. Good faith critics are people, and I put myself in that category, who have been vaccinated twice and gotten a booster shot, who believe in the science, who also believe he's lost his credibility. A bad faith critic might have been on against him for, you know, 2 years, and I'm not particularly persuaded by them, but I believe his good faith critics are pointing out he doesn't have the ability to persuade anymore. That's really an objective inquiry. He down to 68% trust level 3 months ago. Do you think it's still at 68%, Byron?
Absolutely not. I mean, the thing is that when Dr. Fauci says something, do you take that as absolute gold? Do you think, well, I better do this. Dr. Fauci says so. I just think you can't actually trust what he says.
And that is a big problem should we have another public health crisis in the near future. We need new faces everywhere. Dr. Collins stepping down today is announcing his retirement is a beginning. Byron York, get his daily memo every day from the Washington Examiner. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Watch him on Fox. Come right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Welcome back, America. I want you to remember the words Key City Capital, KeyCityCapital.com. For the first time in 21 years on the air, I have allowed a wealth advisory firm to sponsor a segment. Not only allowed it, invited it. I got a call from Charlie Dombeck of Key City Capital. They listen to my show, and they've heard me talk about the coming financial troubles and what I think Brian Westbury agrees with me on. And they said, can we talk to you? And I said, sure. I'm not sure I'm going to let a financial firm on the air with me in a sponsored segment. He said, let me come talk to you. So he came to D.C. We spent hours together. He answered all of my questions. My number one question, have you ever been sued? No. Have you ever been subject to SEC regulatory enforcement? No. What's your average rate of return for your clients? He told me that. And so I said to Charlie, Charlie, there are tough times coming. Come on the show and explain them. He said, yes. And Charlie is that dreaded thing that we all need, a very good accountant. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Hugh.
How'd you like your introduction?
Well, it's a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much.
Would you begin by telling people your background and your resume so they know we are talking with a smart guy, which is the first thing I went over. I want to know where Charlie went to school, what he's done, what he's mastered before we got into his investment approach.
That sounds good, Hugh. Thanks. My background is in accounting. I've been a practicing CPA essentially for nearly 30 years. I started my career at Ernst & Young back in the 80s and worked as a tax planner for most of my life. About 15 years ago, I formed my own firm to address what I viewed as weaknesses in terms of how clients got served, primarily by their CPA. And what I had found over a career of work is that most CPAs are historians. We're pretty good at telling a story that occurred in the past. Oftentimes, CPAs tell you how much money you made, how much you owe, when and where to file your taxes, and oftentimes how to write large checks at the last minute when you least expect it. And I set out to form my firm for the sole purpose of helping clients recover dollars they unnecessarily pay in the form of state and federal income taxes, and built a very successful practice on that simple value proposition that we're going to do for others what CPAs don't do, which is have conversations, help clients control the cost of taxation in their financial life.
Now, that is step one at Key City Capital, and we went over that. There are a lot of people with wealth and a lot of people with middle-class aspirations to the upper class who are blocked by taxes. And in fact, the Panama Papers 5 years ago and now the Pandora Papers are full of tales of how very wealthy people avoid taxes, Charlie. By the way, it's not illegal. It's actually, I think, the responsibility of an informed citizenry to avoid taxes. We are not telling people not to pay their taxes. We're telling people avoid taxes, minimize taxes. That's the best way to grow your wealth. Am I correct about your observation agreeing with mine?
You're absolutely correct. We're going to volunteer to pay tax on the income that we need to live off to support the cash flow need in our lifestyle. But we're going to work diligently in accordance with the Internal Revenue Code to move dollars that we're earning that we don't need today into environments where we have more control, into tax-deferred strategies and potentially into tax-exempt strategies like Roth IRAs. And if you think about it, there's really never been a more important time to have a tax strategy. We have to prepare for what I call the Biden 911 tax attack. If you look at some of the proposals, they represent one of the largest tax increases in American history. And those impacted will shoulder probably the largest economic burden since World War II. And you don't think you're rich? Well, our government does. You can afford to pay more, right? Kind of Joe needs you. So, and possibly even more troubling is the government wants to invest as much as $80 billion into IRS enforcement, effectively creating an army of accounting police with the sole purpose of scouring our 1040s for additional tax dollars.
Now, that's why you opened up the website taxslashing.com. It's easier to remember than Key City Capital, perhaps, but I want you to remember both taxslashing.com, keycitycapital.com. So do you believe, for example, that stepped up basis is on the abyss, is on the edge of the abyss? Because if it is, it's going to change the lives of tens of millions of Americans, and they won't even know it happened.
Well, it's certainly in the Biden's family plan, and we have a couple of proposals out there. We have what the House Democrats want to enact, which is not as pervasive as what the Biden administration wants, and it changes every day, literally, and we just have to keep track of what's happening legislatively and be prepared for ultimately what comes out in the tax code. I am hoping that the step up in basis does not leave us. I think it's important to be able to pass your wealth onto your heirs and have the ability to effectively benefit future generations.
So let me close our first get together. We're going to do this for 7 weeks. It's going to be Finance 101 with Charlie Dombeck of Key City Capital, taxslashing.com. The first step in any investment service ought to be a thorough review, not only of next year's taxes, but of past year taxes. And you go back and get money back that was owed, that was not necessarily paid, right?
That's correct. The first step in the process is a comprehensive plan. And at Key City Capital, we're what I call a wealth acceleration company, where not only do we help clients recover dollars unnecessarily paid in the form of state and federal income taxes, we help them grow their wealth rapidly through a combination of investment strategies that diversify against inflation risk and what potentially is the perfect storm for a market correction.
More coming ahead in the weeks ahead. Go to Key City Capital. Come right back for hour three of Hugh Hewitt. Thank you, Charlie Dombeck. America, Hugh Hewitt, inside the Beltway Live, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton. I almost played The Devil Goes Down to Georgia after what happened to Arkansas when they played Georgia this week, but I decided not to embarrass my friend, Senator Cotton, by bringing up the 37-0 shellacking that Georgia administered to the Razorbacks this week, and I'm sorry about that, Senator.
Well, Hugh, it was certainly an outstanding game by the Bulldogs, one of America's storied and premier college teams, and hats off to them, but we hope that we'll right the ship this weekend against Auburn. The great start the Razorbacks are off to.
They are. They're still ranked. They are ranked number 13 in the AP. I have raised a question today, Senator Cotton, which I'm going to share with you because you occasionally watch college football. Of the 25 ranked teams in the AP, only two are from fully blue states, Oregon at number 8 and falling, and San Diego State at number 25. A couple are from the blue parts of purple states like Michigan and Penn State. Penn State's from the red start of a blue state. Why do you think that 21 out of 25 ranked colleges are in red states?
You know, I don't know, Hugh. That's a good question. I mean, some of it has to do probably with the concentration of Democrats in New England, which has never been a hotbed of college football. Even New England's always really the Mid-Atlantic and New England. Been more about professional sports than college sports, and I don't think anyone who's ever been to an Eagles game or a Giants game or a Pats game and say they don't have enthusiasm for football, but they've just never really had major college programs up in that part of the country.
Here's my theory for you, that the red states produce colleges, especially land-grant colleges, which are the least woke colleges in the university and least threatened by superb college coaches who actually act in a very masculine way, in a manly way, as Harvey Manfield would put it, and that they are not threatened by woke faculty or woke administrators. They're more comfortable in red states. And so red states, over time, attract better athletes who have to live in a hyper-masculine world of the NFL if they want to play professionally. What do you think of my theory?
It's very deep, Hugh. You should have Harvey Manfield on to discuss a theory.
I have Victor Davis Hanson coming up. I'll check with him next. His new book, The Dying Citizen, is where I want to go next. Victor Davis Hanson thinks citizenship is on the ropes. What do you think, Senator Cotton?
Yeah, so I read a brief print of that and highly commended it. I think all of Victor's work is outstanding, and I commend all of his books. But I do think that we need to resurrect the idea of an active citizenry. And it does make a difference to be a citizen as opposed to, say, foreigner or subject. And that is central to the thinking of our founders. You know, citizen and city all come from the same root words. They all get back to man's natural condition of living in community with others, trying to achieve the highest goods. And that's what politics at its best aims for. So I think Victor's book is very timely.
Yeah, he draws a distinction between citizen and resident, which is very important. And I'll be talking with him after the break about why the generals turned against Trump and other key issues. But I wanted to know that you knew the book was out there, and not only do you know it, you've read it. That's, of course, not surprising to me. Let me go to the Senate. Senator Cotton. Mitch McConnell has said repeatedly for, I think, 4 months that the Republicans will not join in raising the debt limit. Senators were attacked by President Biden twice yesterday in under 3 minutes in pretty vicious terms. What did you make of Joe Biden's narrative, which is as false as the day is long?
Joe Biden conveniently omitted that he voted against three debt ceiling increases during the Bush era. And he also conveniently omitted that the Democrats have in their power to pass this bill on a party line basis. And if the Democrats want to spend $7 trillion on a party line basis, then they can borrow that money on a party line basis as well. I don't know how Mitch McConnell can be even any more clear. He's been saying now for 3 months, Hugh, that the Republicans are not going to provide votes to raise the debt ceiling when the Democrats have made it clear that they want to spend that money on a reckless party line basis. This is Mitch McConnell who's leading the Senate Republicans on this matter. It's not some backbench firebrand senator. It is Mitch McConnell. The Democrats have spent years calling him the Grim Reaper of the Senate, and now they're acting surprised that the Grim Reaper is killing their bad ideas. But that's what the Grim Reaper does.
And very effectively, and bravo for him.
And they need to get moving on the relatively straightforward process that would allow them to increase the debt ceiling by a simple majority vote. They should have started moving on it a month ago, but it's well past time for them to get off the dime and take responsibility for the trillions of dollars they're trying to spend this year. If they want to spend the money but they don't want to borrow, that is the ultimate example that the scripture says of eating and swallowing camels with choking on gnats.
Now, I want to ask, Senator, why you think they are so opposed to just do it. They're risking falling into the abyss of default, although I think that risk is somewhere further out than October 18th. Why do you think they are so reluctant, and why do you think they want to harry the Republicans unsuccessfully into allowing them a bipartisan vote on raising the debt limit? What is the political downside to them?
I think there's a couple reasons, Hugh. First is that the White House, and Joe Biden repeated it yesterday, has developed this silly talking point that the $5 trillion bill will cost nothing. It costs zero. And if they have to increase the debt ceiling by $4, $5, $6 trillion, it gives the lie that that's a silly talking point. Second, the Democrats, especially in the House, not the moderate Democrats, there are no moderate Democrats left, only vulnerable Democrats, they don't want to have their fingerprints on a party line debt ceiling increase because they know the voters will hold them accountable for it. And I'd probably add a third reason to you now that I think about it. It would appear, based on Senate customs and precedents, that the debt ceiling cannot be suspended using the budget practices. In the last 10 years, in the 7 or 8 years I've been in the Congress, I think the debt ceiling has typically been suspended to a date certain as opposed to increased by a dollar amount. But using the budgetary practices the Democrats are using right now for their spending bill, it would appear that they have to increase it by a certain number. So rather than they suspend it to next December, they have to vote on a specific dollar amount. And again, I think those vulnerable Democrats are very wary at the time they're spending $7 trillion on a party line basis to also increase the debt ceiling by $7 trillion.
I would add a fourth reason. They have to do another votorama. Would you explain what a votorama is if, in fact, they use reconciliation, which they have to do? I don't think the Republicans care what Joe Biden says.
I am less convinced at that point, Hugh, for the following reason. So when you go through these special budgetary practices, we do have what's called votorama. And they call it that because, in general, it takes a lot of cooperation from both sides to get amendments up for a vote in the Senate. The only time that's not the case is when you're passing a budget bill. And then you have unlimited amendments for an unlimited amount of time. The only limitations are exhaustion. And that's why these votoramas typically run through the middle of the night, sometime well overnight and into Saturday, as they have earlier this year. But what the Democrats would be doing here is only amending their previous budgets, and probably only amending it with a one-page bill, say, you know, increase the debt ceiling by X trillion dollars. That has an amendment like that, as opposed to a budget itself, takes less time, and there are fewer amendments that can be crafted that are germane to it. So I know that Joe Biden is out there saying we'll take hundreds of votes to do this. That's not the case. Republicans will probably have a few budget votes that we are going to have, but I don't foresee Republicans have going through two of these Voteramas voting overnight. That's why there's more than enough time to get it done by October 18th or whatever the real so-called X date turns out to be, if it appears Janet Yellen may have been hiding the ball somewhat on October 18th as the so-called X date.
The X date is the date on which the United States would default on one of its obligations for failure to borrow the money it needs to print in order to pay them. What do you think is the X date, Senator Cotton?
So the Treasury itself said that October 8th was the earliest in various scenarios. Most private analyses push it back at least, 4 or 5 days. Some push it back all the way to the end of October. The Democrats, though, should not be toying with this matter when they have the means at hand to pass this. And again, it's not just Mitch McConnell saying, well, there's this obscure budgetary practice that allows you to pass it on a party-line basis. No, they are actually using those budgetary practices right now. They're literally writing a bill with it. So it is right and timely for them to take this approach.
Do they lose a bullet in their holster if they amend the reconciliation? Someone proposed earlier today, one of their reluctances is they only get one reconciliation a year. I don't think they actually waste that reconciliation with this. Am I wrong?
No, in fact, the irony here is that Chuck Schumer went to the parliamentarian earlier this year to try to get approval for using one budget to pass multiple bills. And the parliamentarian said, yes, under certain circumstances, that could be approved. And it looks like the only thing in the forwards that will have to be used this year is the Senate's Democrats passing a party-line debt ceiling increase. So I would say Chuck Schumer there was hoist on his own petard, as is so often the case.
So to close this out, we're almost out of time. There is no reason the Democrats cannot move. They have not yet begun to move. And the deadline, which is critical for the United States, draws closer. Fair summary?
Absolutely fair to you.
Senator Tom Cotton, always good to talk to you, whether about the dying citizen by VDH or about college football. Remember my theory, red states are the least woke, and that's why red states have the best college football. Take that to the Senate floor.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.